Earlier this month, President UW System President Kevin Riley presented 10 proposed initiatives that will support the growth agenda for Wisconsin's university's effort to produce more college graduates, to stimulate job creation in the state, strengthen our Wisconsin communities. And the ideas are a product of a very intensive statewide strategic planning process. So I'm really pleased to have President Riley with us today. And certainly as we talk with him about our UW system, 26 campuses that we have across the state, I hope you'll join in with your questions and with your comments. These initiatives are really interesting to me. There's some great ideas here, and we'll have a chance to talk with him about it. You will have a chance to ask questions about those action steps and other things as well relating to the UW system. So I hope you join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. President Riley, welcome.
Well, thank you, Professor Mueller. It's nice to be back. I'm sure your listeners would prefer to have some of our meteorology colleagues on if they were here to talk about the cure for winter that they've discovered.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, you know, the last Monday of every month, we have our weather guys on.
I know. I listen to them. I was walking across campus to come to your studio from the Union this morning, and there's just so much ice out there that you always feel like you're about to take a tumble. It's really been some long winter, hasn't it?
I've got a couple of students on crutches now, too, that fell on the sidewalks. Yep. And I tell you, it's not helping their education any at all. But you've got some things, initiatives that could help our students and our university. It's a growth agenda.
We do, and we're excited about this. You know, the growth agenda for Wisconsin, as we dubbed it, really is about what the university can do, needs to do for the state of Wisconsin, for our students and for all residents of Wisconsin. And it's got three main thrusts to it. Number one, we need to produce more baccalaureate degree holders. Number two, we need to use university resources to attract more baccalaureate degree holders into Wisconsin mm-hmm. from out of state. And number three, we need to use university resources to help grow the jobs that will employ both. And why is that so important? Well, we've got a situation where we are now a couple percentage points below the national average in the percent of our population with a baccalaureate degree. Minnesota has pulled out in the last 10 years way ahead of us. They're now between 7 and 8 percentage points ahead of us in the percent of their a population with a baccalaureate degree. And why is that a significant piece of data? Well, it's significant because when you look across the 50 states, the percent of baccalaureate degree holders in the state tracks almost one-to-one across the 50 states with per capita income. The higher the percentage of baccalaureate degrees in your population, the higher the per capita income. And about 10 years ago, we in Minnesota were tied. We had about the same percentage, and our per capita incomes were tied. Now, 10 years later, with that gap between us and Minnesota, they are now $4,000 ahead of us in per capita income.
Wow.
And we can't let that continue and hope to be competitive in the knowledge economy of the 21st century. So we said we need to do our part to help, and there are lots of other players here. The university has a major role, but not the only one. We will produce more baccalaureates. We will work with the tech colleges, the private colleges to help do that. But we need to attract many more young, entrepreneurial, educated folks into Wisconsin. We don't do well as a state in that now. We're down 49th or 50th the last time I looked at those data in attracting people from outside here. I think we can help do that using the university. And then growing the jobs. You've got to do all of these pieces, producing more baccalaureates, attracting more in, and growing the jobs at the same time. Because if you just produce more or you attract more and you don't have the jobs, they won't stay.
Yeah.
And if you develop a bunch of jobs and you don't have a workforce, those jobs aren't going to stay here very long. So it's one of those tricky things where you've got to kind of build the bike while you're riding it.
Well, one of the areas that that you have is to commit the campuses, our 26 campuses, to a coherent set of learning outcomes for all undergraduates. Talk about that a little bit before we take calls.
Sure. That's one of 10 initial action steps that came out of our strategic plan. That growth agenda with the three goals is a big vision for what we need to do for the state. Again, it's not about the UW. It's about what we need to do for our students, the citizens, the state of Wisconsin going forward. And we said, well, let's put together a thorough planning process that involves faculty, staff, and students, and outside folks. And we've got, I can talk a lot about how we did that, and we have lots of outside input into this. And let's figure out what we need to do to get to those goals. We've got to have a plan. So we did that over the last 6 months or so, and at the last Regent meeting, I presented 10 initial action steps that came out of that planning process, the first one of which you just mentioned, that coherent set of learning outcomes for students across all our campuses. The idea here, Larry, is to say to the world, look, anybody who graduates with a baccalaureate degree from a UW campus should know and be able to do these things. And we want to state them at a very broad, high level. Each of our own institutions in the UW system has statements like this. But I think it's time, given all the interest on the part of parents, employers, businesses, graduate schools, saying to us, what really is it that your students know and are able to do when they graduate, for us to articulate that. And I think it'll be an exciting project for us ourselves to get involved in, and I think we'll have some very good results. And a lot of those outcomes are the kinds of things that we've been saying all along you get out of a college education.
Right.
Critical thinking, the ability to communicate well in writing and verbally, the ability to integrate knowledge, the ability to problem solve, the ability to understand theory and then translate it into action. The appreciation for cultures other than your own, for types of people different from you, and the ability, therefore, to work with them in teams to solve problems and make progress for your employer or for the society or for your nonprofit or government, wherever you work. Those are the kind of things I think we need to draw out from each of our campuses, what they say their students are learning, and say overall, as a kind of umbrella statement, what is a UW graduate who's going to be a competent, confident player in the 21st century knowledge economy in Wisconsin, global knowledge economy, what should they know and be able to do?
Yeah, it's a big there'll be a little discussion going on to get that all done.
I think there will, and I think the discussion in a way is part of the point.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mike in Madison has a question for you. Mike, hi.
How you doing? I'm a UW Madison graduate, and I was taught by your former guest Sam Shakashiri, and was a TA for him. And I recently read a study. Or didn't read a study, I read about a study that indicated that the amount of scientists that we are producing doesn't match the need for scientists in the marketplace. And I was just wondering if you had read the study or had a comment on it, or if there's a plan in place to try to emphasize or motivate that marketplace for it. Mm. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Mike.
It's a very good question, Mike. Thanks. And, you know, we in higher ed, and I think the entire society in this country, ought to be very concerned about not doing well in producing competent graduates in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics areas. And in a society that is increasingly technology-based, where we are a leader still in producing and using technology, we have to get a lot more of our students early on interested in those areas and competent in them. So there are a range of initiatives going on in what we call the STEM disciplines, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And one, I'll just mention one that is about to come forward that I think is very interesting, connects back to a network that Larry's very familiar with and with his Extension background, and I certainly was because I was the chancellor of UW Extension before coming into my current job. We've got a wonderful 4-H network across Wisconsin, and one of the things we're going to do with the help of a foundation, I won't say which one because we'll be announcing it in a while, is to try to use that 4-H network to get kids interested early on in some of these disciplines. That's one thing. Another thing we're doing across the system is many of our mathematics departments are looking at how they teach math and whether or not that's been part of the issue that pushes students away from interest in math. Is it too abstract? Can we connect it more to the practical problems that indeed we all need to be able to use math to solve, so that students, again, early on in grade school get to think, well, this isn't something where you move A's and B's and equal signs around that doesn't have connection to anything. It's an important part of what I need to be able to do as I become an adult in a technologically driven society. And, you know, when I talk with students who want to come into the university and they talk, I ask them, what major would you like to study? One of the things I almost always wind up saying is, well, you better take 4 years of math in high school, because, you know, if you want to be a nurse, you're going to need that. Certainly if you want to be an engineer or a scientist, you're going to need that. But if you want to go into any of the technology related disciplines, you're going to need that. And increasingly, just to be an educated person in our society, you need to have those kinds of skills. So finding ways to build our pipeline of students in this country up to the level where we need it, and then having more of them go on into a baccalaureate major, into graduate school in these areas, is something that as a country we need to work on, and we are. We haven't made the kind of progress yet that we need to, though.
Yeah, it is an issue. We need to have them ready once they get here to be interested in that and have the background. And I think I like the 4-H idea, and there must be other ways to get our younger kids interested early on.
Yes, yeah. There's a national project called Project Lead the Way that is designed to infuse interest in and knowledge of the STEM disciplines into the schools early on. A number of our campuses are working with that program as well. And that's really a kind of pre-engineering mm-hmm. program to get kids excited about and feeling comfortable about thinking of engineering as a major.
Kevin Riley, our guest today, the University of Wisconsin System President. I'm really pleased to have him with us today as we talk about the growth agenda for Wisconsin from the University of Wisconsin System, what the 26 campuses can do to stimulate jobs, to produce more college graduates, and to strengthen our Wisconsin communities. And he'll be with us right up till 12:30 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking education in Wisconsin, higher education, with the UW System President, Kevin Riley. Larry Mueller here, pleased to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have some questions, or you can email us as well at talk@wpr.org. Every line is filled, President Riley, so let's go to the phones. And Andrea in the Twin Cities has a question for you or comment. Hi, Andrea.
I'm actually in Wisconsin, though. I'm from the Twin Cities.
Okay.
I'm actually on 94 right now. But I just wanted to say I came from a family where no one had college degrees. And, you know, we weren't exactly destitute, but we certainly weren't affluent either. And both because I think because I was a woman and because of coming from that family background, which, you know, it's not the same as being a person of color or somebody who's really poor, but just feeling that you are not, you don't really belong in college, and feeling that displacement. I think that that's a kind of a barrier to going on in sciences, especially with, you know, the whole American competitive thing that is present even in the sciences. I really sort of felt, you know, I'm never going to really excel. I'm never going to be hired on to be a project lead because I just don't have what it takes. I don't have the background. And so I would just urge the president, when you're trying to attract more graduates and more science folks, look to women and look to people of those backgrounds to make it easier for them to be a part of the scientific community.
Thanks, Andrea, for calling. And I think within the action steps, there are things that you've done to look at that.
Yes, there are. And, you know, I just say one particular thing. We've got a wonderful program on women in science, technology, and engineering on the Madison campus with some terrific women faculty in those areas, and men too, but the women are leading it, trying to bring up the next generation of women scientists. And so that's at the higher ed level. We've got a major new program aimed now at younger kids and their families. Andrea was talking about her own family background, first generation college goer, if you want to think of it that way. I think a lot of our listeners have probably heard about the Wisconsin Covenant, and the idea there is to work with eighth graders and their families and the schools where they are attending, and to say, look, if you study hard and do well in high school, if you be a good citizen, stay out of trouble, if you take a college preparatory curriculum, and it'll help you figure out what that is, and you fill out that financial aid form if you need it, we'll help you financially to find a way to cover the tuition. And you need to go to college, because we need every one of our students to believe that it's important for him or her to do that, because it is. If you're an eighth grader now and 12 and 13, 10 years from now, we'll give you 10 years to get through high school and college, you'll be 23, starting a career. There's no way that you're going to have a decent, comfortable life without some kind of post-secondary credential in a 21st century knowledge economy. 10 years from now, those who are 23 will be working for 40 years probably, God knows what will happen in terms of new developments in that time. But one thing that's clear, they'll need that college degree. So part of our goal here is to say to first-generation students, say to students of color, say to students from disadvantaged backgrounds, and say to all our kids, you've got to think of yourself in eighth grade as on the way to college, and we will help you to know what to do in high school academically to be prepared to be successful. Mm-hmm. We'll try to help motivate you, and we'll help you with the finances of it. And I hope people have heard about the wonderful gifts, $40 million that the Great Lakes Higher Education Assistance Corporation has given to help close those gaps in financial aid, and now $175 million gift from John and Tasha Morgridge, two graduates of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, from two Wisconsinites that now live in California. John's the former chair of Cisco, and they stepped up to say, we want an opportunity for folks like us in Wisconsin to be able to go on to college, and we're going to put a lot of money where our mouth is. So we are seriously focused on those first-generation families, because we know we need to get many of them up to and through post-secondary education. Going back to those goals of the growth agenda, we don't have enough people in Wisconsin to leave any of those kids behind in terms of getting them into and through post-secondary ed. And let me say, it doesn't mean coming to the UW-Madison campus necessarily as a freshman. We've got a great set of public technical colleges in the state. If somebody wants to start and get an associate's degree as a computer technician, more power to them. Let's help them get prepared to do that. Eventually, they may want to come on to one of our campuses or one of the private campuses and get a baccalaureate degree. Let's figure out ways to help encourage them to do that, too.
And that sort of, I think, kind of helps in terms of the UW-Madison, because we wind up with more applicants than we can ever possibly handle.
Right.
And I know you're addressing that.
Yes, we're trying to. And people probably read some of the headlines in the last day or two where the applicant numbers at UW-Madison are the highest ever, 25,000, I think. So it's not that Madison is raising standards to keep people out. It's just that so many more people want to get in, and therefore more people are getting rejected because we don't have slots for them. But what John Wiley, the chancellor at Madison, has done, to his credit, is to go and strike agreements with a number of our two-year campuses and others outside of the system to say, well, if you want to start here and do the first 2 years at a UW Rock or a UW Sheboygan or a UW Marinette or one of the technical colleges, you can start here. It's relatively low cost. If you want to live at home, you can even save more money. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to do that, that's your choice. And then if you keep a good average, you will be able to seamlessly move into UW-Madison as a junior, complete your final 2 years on the Madison campus, and walk away from your undergraduate experience with a UW-Madison degree. And we like to say, after you graduate, people don't ask you where you started. They ask you where you finished and where your degree is from. Now, we know, though, that some kids, some families really want a bigger campus experience right from the get-go as freshmen, where there's a large sports venues, lots of cultural opportunities, a residence life program with lots of people in dorms. So part of what we will do as one of the action items out of the strategic planning process is have our UW Green Bay campus, they're very enthusiastic about this, step up and do a kind of joint admission with Madison, with the notion that students may feel more comfortable as an alternative to Madison going to UW-Green Bay for the first 2 years, because they have all those kinds of things, the residence life programs, the sports teams, the cultural opportunities at on a larger scale than some of our smaller two-year campuses do. And you know what we find when some students do that now just on their own without having a program, which we will be putting in place as a pilot between Green Bay and Madison, we find that a fair number of those students who think they want to go to Madison and start somewhere else say, gee, I really like it here.
I like it here.
They get a boyfriend, a girlfriend. They get involved in an activity. They like their professors, and they wind up staying. And that will happen with some of those kids. So that's a good thing all around. It's good for UW-Green Bay. It's good for UW-Madison because it relieves some of the admissions pressure. And it prevents us from losing some of those kids to out-of-state, because we know now some of those who want to go to Madison and don't get in wind up going to University of Minnesota, to the University of Iowa. And then the chances of losing them long-term, of their not coming back to live and work,
increased.
Are increased. Right.
Mary in Madison is next. Mary, hi.
Hello. My goodness, your guest has his work cut out for him. He must feel like he's rolling a boulder uphill. I have the typical grow-up-in-Madison story. I spent many happy years at the University in Madison and had a great time, and then discovered there surely wasn't much to be done with a general degree. And I have watched the younger members of our family go through, and through nobody's fault, everybody winds up in the same dilemma. If you are one of the few that go through in a hard science, and more I notice that Asians and immigrants are the ones that are moving into those because they understand the implications of doing that, you're virtually backed into having to leave. Madison can only absorb a few more graduates every year in the hard sciences. Everybody else, it seems, winds up working in a very low-wage job. You can't begin to pay back. What's that old saying? If your cab driver or your waitress has less than a PhD, you feel cheated in Madison? I can't count the part-time jobs I've had where I was working side-by-side with people with university degrees, making the same kind of money high schoolers did. Now, the people I know that stopped at high school are in a desperate way. They really are in a desperate way. But it seems as if the few people in our family that found jobs in Madison, through no fault of theirs, the company was happy with their work, were very quickly let go or laid off as people cut back their workforce. And I remember a few months ago, one of the spokesmen at MATC sending an article to the paper and saying proudly that Madison was going to get all these new jobs in service work and information processing industries, and all I could think was, everybody knows what that means. I did notice, I wanted to ask your guest, one, obviously adding jobs is going to be a really slow process, and so we are, in effect, all paying taxes to send all of our graduates out of state, including the young ones in my family, if they're going to have any sort of life that they could have had, you know, without the university degree. But secondly, I have to wonder, the friends I have that went through MATC and actually came out with a useful skill, virtually all had multiple job offers before they even graduated. And I was hoping, I realize this is not your speaker's angle, but I was hoping he would say a little bit about the possibility that we actually need more people with useful skills if you're not going to go into a hard science. There seems to be no middle ground these days.
Well, what do you think, President Riley?
Well, Mary's raised a whole passel of interesting issues, and just let me touch on a couple aspects of it from my perspective. Remember what I said about the three goals of the growth agenda. Mm-hmm. There are three, not one, not two, but three. We need to produce more baccalaureate degree holders. We need to attract more in, and we need to help grow the jobs that will employ both. So I would certainly agree with her there. And I think we have the beginnings of some success stories there of the kinds of high-paying knowledge economy jobs we want to have in Wisconsin. And that success story is the University Research Park, a little ways west of where we're sitting in your studio now. We now have more than 4,000 jobs in that research park at an average annual salary of $62,000 a year. And they're the kinds of jobs that we want to have for the future, non-polluting, clean, high-paying jobs that will have a future for the people who are in them. We have plans now to do that, and we're starting to try to do that in lots of the other campuses in towns around the state. We're different from Minnesota in that regard. You know, we've got lots of medium-sized cities, the Oshkoshes, the Eau Claires, the La Crosses, the Superiors, the Green Bays, whereas in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, most of the population is caught up in that Twin City metroplex. So we think we have a real opportunity here to help grow and attract talent into those medium-sized cities by using the research that's done here at Madison, but also research increasingly done on those smaller campuses in those towns to help at an appropriate level replicate what we're doing in the research park here. And we have some great young faculty on those campuses who are getting together. I've spoken to them several times. Getting together with each other across the campuses to say, I'm interested in this particular science or this particular pharmacological issue. How can I work with you between or among Stout and Eau Claire in that part of the River Falls and that part of the state? So we will grow that kind of activity, and that's part of grow or action item number three, accelerate transformation of knowledge capacity into high-paying jobs and economic vitality in Wisconsin. One more thing in response to Mariette. We are working much, much more aggressively with the tech colleges to help folks who are coming out of the tech colleges, and maybe they've gone to work, been successful, as Mary said, with a practical skill, and they've gone to work, but now they want to move up into a supervisory position.
Yeah.
And they don't have the credentials they're being told to do that. So we have some brand new kinds of degrees in the system called Bachelors of Applied Studies, which takes people out of the technical colleges with an associate degree. And instead of sending them back to do freshman English with the 18-year-olds, we have them do their general education at the junior and senior level. You know, most of us started our general education and then narrowed down to a major when we got into the junior, senior year. This is kind of an upside-down degree in that sense. You start out with the equivalent of a major from the tech colleges, and then we build a general education around it. So we're excited about that, and we think, again, that will help get people on to higher levels of education, which will create more job opportunities for them at the same time that we're creating more jobs. And the last thing I'd say to Mary is that I have a bachelor's degree in English and a master's degree in English and a PhD in English, and look what happened to me.
Mary, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I was thinking, as you were talking a little bit about the history department at the UW-Madison, they're running having a series of speakers come in, and the overall title is "What do you do with a degree in history?"
Right.
And the first speaker was Bud Selig.
Oh yes, I read about that. Yes.
So
there you go.
Mary, I want to give Jack and Whitewater a chance to join in. Jack, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi, glad to join in. I want to go back a little bit to what was discussed earlier, where you have you recognize the need for a feeder system to make all of this work. And you mentioned looking into working with 4-H. One of the things that I'm not so sure we have, and I wonder how you overcome this if we don't really have it to the extent it's necessary, is a comprehensive high school approach to things that includes applied technology centers as part of the overall high school, and not just in the STEM areas, but in all of the areas, so that everything is integrated both in a theoretical and applied basis, beginning in high schools or before, so that you, in fact, have the incoming college-bound population ready to go that you need. It seems to me that without that, you can't create scientists and mathematicians from the day go when they arrive at the university or in the college system here, or even the tech college system here in the state, and be nearly as effective as we need to be.
Jack, I thank you very much for calling. President Riley, comment?
Yes, I think it's a very, very good point, and we are working along the lines that Jack suggests. We're part of a national effort that's being driven by the National Governors Association, as a matter of fact, to better align high school standards with college preparation. It's called the American Diploma Project. So we're working closely with the Superintendent of Public Instruction, Libby Burmaster, on that, and we're making progress. I think you'll see more news about that as we go forward. It's an attempt to say we've got to be clearer in our discussions with each other about what the standards are to be prepared for a post-secondary education, whether it's in technology or English or history or biology, so that we at the post-secondary level are not doing as much remedial work. That remediation we're doing is necessary now and we should do it, but we want to do less of it. And partly because it's not a good use of the public taxpayers' dollars to teach things twice. There's one of the action items Jack should know out of our strategic planning, which says this: collaborate with the PK-12 community to enrich college preparation and expand college offerings in high school. And that's both about doing the kind of preparation in high school that lets you avoid remediation when you come into college, but it's also about getting for those kids, and there are many of them in our high schools, who are ready to do college work, getting more college credit work done in the junior, senior year of high school. So they come in not with a deficit, but actually with a head start on what they want to have to get a baccalaureate degree. And one more thing on the feeder school issue, which Jack mentioned. We have, among the 26 campuses in the UW system, there are 13 two-year campuses. We call them the UW colleges. Again, UW Rock, UW Marinette, UW Waukesha, those places. In the last go-around, when we looked at the tuition situation for the first time, I think certainly in the time I've been here, 12 years in Wisconsin, we decided we are not going to raise the tuition at those two-year colleges. We're going to keep it flat. So when we made our last tuition increases, last round of those, we intentionally held the two-year colleges flat because we want those to be, in terms of access, feeder schools. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to send a message to the people of Wisconsin and, in a sense, direct the flow a little more than we have in the past, acting like a system saying, boy, these are a great bargain. They're a great place to start. You've got now a guarantee of seamless transfer. You'll get credit for your first 2 years if you transfer from UW-Rock to any of the four-year schools, including Madison and Milwaukee in the UW system. So part of what we are trying to come up with overall in this strategic planning is a way to use all elements of the system together to accomplish the goals of the growth agenda.
No. Interesting. Thanks, Jack. Tom in Madison, I want to give a chance, who has been waiting a long time. Tom, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
You mentioned 4-H on a couple of occasions. I remember a couple of years ago, your guest wrote an editorial about 4-H as the pre-college prep program for the whole state of Wisconsin. Could you talk more about what 4-H can do, especially in science and engineering? You've talked a lot about that already broadly, but specifically as something that we can do for kids that are out of school and after school on the weekends during the summer. What can 4-H do to help speed that along?
Well, thanks. And I did write that op-ed and was with my predecessor in this job, Catherine Lyle, at the time, as a matter of fact. And it was one of the anniversaries of the creation of 4-H. And, you know, we've got one of the strongest 4-H's, Larry knows, strongest 4-H traditions in the country in Wisconsin, and we're looking to figure out how to build on that for educational purposes. Again, get at those goals of the growth agenda. I keep going back to keep our eyes on the prize there. And as I said, we will be announcing shortly a new project with some foundation funding to use all of those 4-H clubs as ways to interest kids in the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics disciplines and get them started working on it. And one of the things that occurred to us is that 4-H certainly has a long history of hands-on learning. A lot of what the kids do traditionally in 4-H clubs is relating to, in the agricultural side, technology, hands-on learning. And we increasingly have 4-H clubs in urban areas where they're doing great projects in the inner city. If we can, again, get more of those kids thinking about a STEM discipline and begin to do some curricular work with them that gets them prepared to do that, confident that they can do it. One of our earlier callers, Andrea, talked about that confidence thing, not feeling that she had the confidence to do it as a first-generation college goer. Well, I think we can use the 4-H clubs and their whole culture to get more kids confident about that. And, you know, just one more word on 4-H. When I was a chancellor of extension, we had a anniversary celebration at the Board of Regents. I kind of tricked the chancellors at the time and the regents before that meeting into telling me who were 4-H kids. And it was about half of the chancellors and half the regents. And I made them all stand up and say, you know, do I need to make another point about the leadership development value of 4-H? It made the point.
Well, I tell you, I gave a talk once and said I didn't get involved with the University of Wisconsin until I was five, and that was through extension and through going to my sister's 4-H club meetings.
There we go.
It's a wonderful thing, and I tell you what, the agenda, the 10 items, are included on a website. We're just about out of time here, so let me give that. It's advantage.wisconsin.edu. If you want to go online and see this growth agenda for Wisconsin, that's a place to do it. It's just been out since early February, so it's pretty new. And Kevin Riley, thank you so much.
Thanks, Larry. Enjoyed being here. Your callers are terrific, as always.
As always. UW System President Kevin Riley. Hope to get him back again. We talk about this some more and other issues relating to our higher education in Wisconsin. And thanks a lot for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.